Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, wow, you're in for a real treat today. I was really privileged to get to sit and spend a bit of time with Laura Jane Grace of Against Me. And this was just such a wonderful chat, as you're about to hear. Before we get on with it, just say a big thank you to Emma for facilitating this episode. Big thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Make sure you go and check out all the other pods on our beloved network. And big thank yous to 76 for producing this podcast. Once you've listened to today's episode, which I'm telling you now you're going to really, really enjoy, why not have a little look in the back catalogue? Because there's about 170 episodes now Off the Beaten Track, and there's some wonderful episodes. You know, if you enjoyed this chat, I'd definitely point you in the direction of, I don't know, The Deftones, that's a really good episode that's come out recently. Maxine Peake, Chuck D, James Lavelle, oh gosh, James Acaster. Go and have a rummage in the archives, because there's like I say, 170 episodes now, and there's some real belters in there that I think you'll really enjoy listening to. And if you really enjoy it and you want even more, then I do have a Patreon page as well, and each week I put up 4 radio shows, some video episodes and standalone Patreon episodes, and yeah, loads of bits and pieces. So if you want more stuff to listen to, then head over there, and by doing that you also you know, give your support to Off the Beaten Track, which is, you know, a labour of love. So any extra support is much, much appreciated. You can find out about all of these things at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Nearly forgot my own web address then. Let's get back to business. Please enjoy today's wonderful episode with Laura Jane Grace.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Me, Stu with him.
So we are recording, sitting opposite me today via the means of Zoom, Laura Jane Grace. Hello.
Hello.
So where are you today, Laura?
I'm at home in Chicago, Illinois.
As Chicago, what's going on lockdown-wise out there?
You know, it's, well, the sun is shining, so that's a nice thing.
Absolutely.
I live next door to a pretty amazing park. I plan on taking a walk through the park. So far, all summer long, the park has been there, and it's been green, and it's been lovely. So that's on the plus side. In general, I've kind of just tried to stick to my neighborhood this summer. You know, like things feel tense anytime I go out in really, really big public places. You know, if, like a run to the store or whatever, people seem very on edge. And I don't know. I think everyone's just trying to survive, you know, but it's been like the most low key summer I've had in my entire adult life, as far as like, you know, limited human interactions. I do month on month off parenting with my daughter. And, you know, other than than being with my daughter every other month, I haven't been in another human being's context.
Oh, really?
Oh.
So have you found it creatively?
You know, there's a lot of things about it to me that have been really motivating and have really centered me in odd ways. I think for a while I felt apprehensive to talk about that, but then I saw other people talking about it too and how they found it similar. But, you know, obviously, like, I made a record during this time. I made a zine. I finished my zine. I, like, sold copies on my Etsy page last week. So I've, like, creatively stayed really motivated. But in general, I think, like, you know, that's not to say that self-motivation is always the easiest.
Sure.
But I really, like, push myself to stay motivated of, like, okay, you need to wake up in the morning and you need to do something. You know, like, you need to go running. You need to maybe do yoga. You need to, like, get yourself out of bed. You need to make your bed every day. You know, like, you need to – you can't fall into this, like, because you'll never get out of it otherwise. And just
so
keep,
true.
You know?
So true. Like, you know, being honest, like, the last 2 days have been the first 2 days that I've ever just thought, wow, this is strange times we're living in. And it started to kind of hit a little bit yesterday. And then this morning I was like, I can't be bothered to go for a run. And I was like, man, you got to go for a fucking run. Go for a run. Just do it. And, like, and I got back from the run and just something as simple as that does make a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And, like, you know, adding rituals to that too of, like I have a calendar and, like, you know, I'll mark every day that I do go for a run and then, like, color it in green so that I have a visual to look along with it, you know, and then setting goals of, like, you know, when I set the recording session for the album, I you know, purposely, like, booked it a little further in advance where I was like, okay, I've got a month until I'm going to go into the studio now. So then every day I'm going to go running first thing. And then I'm going to practice the songs. I'm going to run through all the songs twice. And then, you know, whatever other chores or stuff that I set for myself to do today, just making sure I met those things. And then having, like, an incremental goal to look forward to.
Sure.
And then similar with, like, okay, album release is coming up. I've got that to look forward to. That's what I'm working towards right now. Because if it wasn't for those kind of anchor points, I just would be drifting out here in the abyss, you know?
Yeah. Well, should we talk about some records? That's always a nice thing to do.
Happy to.
Wonderful. Laura, what's the song with the greatest ever intro?
Band from the Roxy by Crass. Name a meaner drum beat. Come on.
That's such a good shot. When I saw your answers earlier, I was like, man, why has no one picked that tune?
It's such a, like, you know, Penny, who played drums for Crass, is such a unique drummer in that people really discredit him in that he might not be on paper like the most technical drummer, you know, like he's a punk drummer, but it's people can't reproduce it. I've never heard a drummer play that drum beat the same way that he plays it and the same way that he records it. And I mean, the snarl of Steve Ignorant's vocals when they come in, yeah, it's pure venom. And I can't think of another drum beat preceding a vocal that, like, encapsulates that venom. Like, you feel everything from that song in that drum beat, and it's just a simple drum beat, and you know exactly what it's like. You just feel the energy. It just completely translates.
It's such a call of arms, isn't it? Right from the off, it's like, right, strap yourselves in. We've got something to say here. It's such a good choice, that is. Like I said, stunned no one's ever picked that. Was there any other kind of honorable mentions that you considered before you settled on that?
I that was the first thing that popped into my head, and then, like, I was like, that's too easy. I can't just go with that. Yeah. And then I, like, was pushing myself to come up with other stuff, and everything else I was thinking of were maybe, like, more guitar driven, you know, like, and kind of seemed in cliche. Like, for a second my brain drifted to, like, well, what about, like, Back in Black or something like that? You know, da-na-na, but really, like, they all just pale in comparison to Band from Roxy, you know?
Yeah, amazing choice. Okay, Laura, track two. The first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you?
It was Somewhere Over the Rainbow, as sung by Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz. And, you know, that was a movie that really early on, I watched repeatedly. Like I had a VHS copy that was almost like a babysitter in ways, where whenever my mom needed a nap or something in the other room, like she would put it on and I would sit there and I'd watch The Wizard of Oz. And so when thinking about the question, like I'd never had that question before. And I'd never really thought back, you know, and every time I thought I hit on something, like for a second, I was like, was it 18 in life, Skid Row? There was a Bon Jovi song on New Jersey that I remember affected me in the third grade, but I just was like, well, think a little bit further back than that. And it had to have been somewhere over the rainbow, you know? It's a very emotional song in general, right?
Completely. It's a beautiful record. What was the emotion that you got from that, Laura?
Longing for home.
Yeah.
And it was like a strange feeling could feel transmitted. I grew up in a military family, so I was constantly moving around. So, you know, from a very young age, constantly living with a feeling of like, oh, I really miss this place that I used to live, and having left a group of friends behind. So there was always that like feeling of missing that place where I used to belong, and wishing that I could somehow get back there.
Was that tough, constantly moving around? As you know, well, I take it you're talking about living on military bases. That kind of upheaval, that can be pretty trying for a kid, right?
Yeah, I think namely just the making a new friend group, you know, was something that was really difficult and gets difficult as you get older, you know, and especially as when you reach adolescence and stuff like that. But it was tough at times, you know, but in retrospect, I'm really, really grateful for the experience and for having, like, from a young age to have gotten to see so many places and to experience so much variety in culture and, like, you know, just living in different places, seeing the world in different ways from a young age. It naturally just expanded my worldview and made me realize that there were places beyond where I was, you know?
Yeah. And that point's where you know, you have to go and sort of make friends. That isn't easy. And like you say, the older you get, the tougher that is, you know, when adolescence bites and things like that. Like, was you a confident kid?
I, you know, consistently lost confidence. You know, there were certain things that, you know, from a young age, like I struggled with, that diminished my confidence, you know, whether that was like, you know, first day of kindergarten, the elementary school I went to, the kindergartners had to enter through a different door than the rest of the kids. And so you lined up in front of this door. And on that very first day, the teachers didn't believe I was a kindergartner because I was so tall. They thought I was lying. So I remember like multiple incidents of being met with distrust as a kid that really like shattered me in ways because I wasn't being dishonest. You know, another example of that would be like, it's so stupid, but like, you know, when you're a kid and you have to ask the teacher to use the bathroom. And like, it never would have occurred to me as a child on my own of like, oh, I should lie and say I need to use the bathroom when I don't really need to. I would have only ever asked to use the restroom if I needed to use the restroom. And then teachers immediately meeting you with suspicion for that of like, oh, you're just trying to leave the classroom. You know, you're trying to do something sneaky in the bathroom. So things like that, I think, like kind of broke down my confidence and confused me as a kid. Because I think that, you know, I was a kind kid. I was a nice kid, you know. Yeah.
But I think, you know, I don't know how it is for you, but I think, you know, things like that, you know, asking teachers if you can use the bathroom and things like that, at the time you do it because that's what you're told to do. And as you get older, in hindsight, you just think, what was I thinking? Like, you know, and it's not until you get, you know, for me, like a lot older, that you question authority. But at the time, you know, I guess it's just what you do. And I just wish, and I say to my kids sometimes, like, you don't have to do that. Like, and they're like, what? No, you don't. No, you don't. And it's like, oh, I think we do. It's like, no, you can just say, no, I don't want to do that. It's fine. You know, they're not in charge.
Good for you, though, because that's, you know, and that's something I do with my daughter as well. But that was something no one ever told me then, you know, and I wish that they would have, because that would have given me that confidence. And I said that exact thing to my daughter, where I was like, listen, if you have to go to the bathroom at school and the teacher tells you that you can't go, you fucking go, you know. I will not be upset with you, and I will stand up for you, and I will have your back. And that's the simplest thing to say to a kid. And it's something no one ever said to me as a kid, of like, I have your back and I trust you, and that the teacher isn't always going to be right, you know? So that confusion of like inherently trusting authority figures and then having that trust broken repeatedly as a kid was something that, you know, shatters your little world.
Yeah. And then you start listening to Crass. Fuck.
Crass sooner, though, is the thing. Unfortunately, there was like a couple couple stepping stones, to quote a popularly covered punk song that I heard early on. A couple stepping stones in between that if Crass would have gotten there earlier, I think would have helped me in my development.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about them formative years. So, for track three, Lower, the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Okay, this is embarrassing. I chose the Ramones, I Want to Be Sedated. And I'll explain that in that when I was like, you know, 13 years old and first getting into punk, I was like one of the first kids to really get into punk at my school. And I like very much was into the fashion of it, like spiking my hair out like Sid Vicious and like safety pins and bondage belts and stuff like that. And at the time, I went by the name Tom Gable. And people would sing at me. They would go, ba 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 ba, I want to be Tom Gable.
Of course they did.
I would walk down the halls of high school, and that's when people would sing at me. So that song will forever remind me of that. And, you know, I'm okay with that. That's part of my past.
So how was school, Laura?
Oh, it was hell. I mean, I dropped out when I was 16. It wasn't because of that, though. But yeah, I did, you know. I mean, there was good memories, but the good memories are mostly like friend associated. And, you know, honestly, a lot of those people that are the good memories from school, like I keep in touch with, and I'm still friends with, you know. You know, I do like, I remember the good more than I remember the bad from it when it comes down to it. And even some of the bad, like, seems like it was fun. You know, some of the trouble you got into back then where you realize, like, oh, that didn't have any real confidence, like real consequences. Like Saturday school didn't really matter that much, whatever, you know?
That's so true, though, what you say about, like, you know, if you had good friends at school, and there's no reason why they shouldn't still be your friends. It's like when people say to me, like, oh, there's a school reunion, I'm like, well, I'm kind of still cool with all my friends that I want to be friends with. I'm not bothered about the others. There's a reason I've not seen them for 30 years, you know. I don't need to go and see them now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and you know, Facebook and stuff like that has extended that in a way that's odd, where even some of the people that I wasn't friends with that I knew peripherally, that I've ended up like following on certain social media, like sometimes I'll have this question of like, Jesus Christ, is like, do I just follow them for the rest of my life and just like know day by day what they're doing from their up forever? Like, that's not natural feeling, you know, in a lot of ways. Like, some relationships are meant to die and disappear from your life, and that's it. That's okay, you know. But the ones that do maintain in a natural way, I think are so valuable, and that you do realize, like, the cliche of like, you don't make friends like that ever again, you know, is that that's just from a certain period of time in your life, and it's irreplaceable.
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor, Eggfried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humor in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, They do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. Was you a creative kid?
I was a creative kid, yeah. I was very much lost in my own imagination of, like, making up stories in my head. And I loved playing with toys. Like, I loved playing with action figures. But I would never play the roles with the action figures of what you were supposed to play with them. You know, if it was like G.I. Joe's, I didn't play war. Like, I enacted really intricate, complicated storylines. Romances and stuff like that, you know? And I had, like, you know, I had my friends that were really into that too. And we would, for like most of grade school, I lived overseas, and I lived in Italy, in Southern Italy. And I actually, my best friend was a British kid named Richard Bevins. And me and Richard, there were orchards behind our house, and we would, like, just live in our own fantasy world of, like, goblins and ghouls and witches and warlocks, and run through these orchards where it'd be like, you know, a field of peach trees separated by these long rows of bamboo, and the bamboo in the center was like hollowed out where you could build forts, and there'd be like old houses that were like bombed out from World War II and foxholes that you could just run around and play in, or this well where it was like a long well that went into the ground and then stairs that went down into it, and it was like the scariest thing ever, you know. And us, like, it was like my family, a lot of British families, and then the Italian families, and we would just all the kids would just play and have these epic adventures in our neighborhood.
So cool. Did you know what you wanted to be at school?
I started playing guitar in the third grade when I was 8 years old. I saved up money mowing lawns and ordered a guitar from a Sears catalog. And I always wanted to be in a band, to the point where, like, you know, I got that guitar and my parents got me lessons, but the lessons, like, the teacher wasn't teaching me rock music, you know, they weren't teaching me stuff I wanted to know. So it wasn't really sticking at the time. But, like, I knew that even without that, like, I would write songs, and then I would, like, make up band names and write them on the back of my jean jacket and marker and tell kids at school, like, yeah, that's my band name.
Tell me some. Can you remember any?
Well, the early ones were the Black Shadows, the Leather Dice, stuff like that, you know, like embarrassing stuff.
That would sound like gangs from The Warriors. I'm loving it.
Right? You know, it's funny because, like, at the time I thought it was really cool. And then I went through a long period of time where I was like, oh, that's embarrassing. And now I look back where I'm like, wait, that was really cool. The Black Shadows. That was a kind of cool band name.
Yeah, great name.
but then, you know, like, eventually learned how to play, you know, kind of, but learned more to write songs properly and stuff like that. But I that's always just what I wanted to do. You know, like, I always wanted to make music.
Okay. Track 4. What was the first song you remember buying from a record store?
Well, the first album I bought from a record store was Def Leppard's Hysteria.
Nice.
I bought it on cassette. And, you know, I think the biggest single off of that album was probably Pour Some Sugar on Me. And if you listen to, you know, the Against Me catalog and some of the big choruses we have, I think that, you know, for better or worse, those big choruses are directly attributable to the chorus approach of Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard.
It's a monster chorus, though, right?
Totally. It's all about breaking it down to the kick snare moments of, like, you know, like, that never goes out of style. It always works, you know?
And so, as somebody that, you know, got into punk at a young age, I mean, I'd also like to know how punk impacted on you, you know, as a young kid. Yeah, I'll ask that first. Yeah, how did punk impact on you?
Well, it blew everything away. You know, like it was such a like nothing else felt as dangerous. Nothing else felt as real. Nothing else felt as immediate. And it had such a like creeping presence into my life of ways that I didn't understand, whether that was like, you know, first, like my first memory of punk was really seeing the Sex Pistols, just the band name, spray painted on a wall, you know, and being like, oh my God, you know, like the Sex Pistols, you know, like for a really young kid, seeing the word sex spray painted on a wall was, I didn't realize what they meant even by Sex Pistols. Yes. You know, I just saw the word sex and I was like, that's dangerous feeling, you know? And I started wearing the Sid chain with the lock.
Yeah.
In the third grade, because Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses wore it. And I, you know, remember going to school and the school principal telling me I had to take it off and me being like, well, it's locked to my neck. I can't do anything. And them having to bring bolt cutters and cut it off of my neck, you know?
Really?
And like, and then discovering like that, oh, Duff didn't invent that. Like that was a Sid thing, you know? But when I really fell into it, it was like, you know, it was the nihilism and the self-destructiveness of it that I identified with it. And I think that was really like living in a place where I didn't see an escape from. At that point, I had moved to South Florida, and South Florida was the worst. It was so unfriendly to kids and to youth. And you know, it's at the bottom of Florida, so there's only one way to go but north. So the rest of the world seems so far away, and I didn't expect to live, you know, but beyond like my early 20s, if even, you know. So there was just this like the sentiment of no future really resonated with me. And that's what I kind of latched onto. And then from there, you know, you expand and you get into other punk bands. And even if that was as simple as like with, you know, it's really natural of like you discover the Sex Pistols and then the Clash is kind of like the next step, you know. And the Clash, definitely their politics are more refined and open your world view even more, where you're like, wait, white man in Hammersmith Palais, what does that mean? You know, like it challenged your thinking, especially to me, just like a white kid in South Florida, of like, what are they talking about? And then really like discovering a band like Crass, where it opens up the world of anarchist politics. And there was things that, you know, in my life coincided with that, like incidents of like getting beat up by cops, getting arrested, that, you know, made me want to fight back. And it's when punk started offering the tools to fight back, whether that was simple things like make a zine and connect yourself with people, become pen pals with people outside of the world, feeling like, okay, well, there's these corporate conglomerates that control music now, of like, whether that's like big magazines or MTV, you know, and feeling like, well, that's so far out of reach. I'll never be able to be on MTV. I'll never be able to get into that world. And then punk coming in and being like, you can do it. Just do it yourself. You know, like make your own rules. Like, and that's world shifting to a young kid. And it was true. And you were able to demonstrate to yourself really easy of how that would work. You know, you were able to make a zine, go to Kinko's, make copies, give it out to people, and form your own little scene. And it didn't have to be exactly like anyone else's idea of what it was. You could invent your own version of punk, and it was just as valid and real. I mean, that was just like, it was life changing, and it set my course, you know, in the direction that brought me to where I am today.
It's that whole DIY thing, isn't it? It's like, it's so powerful, you know, and it's so weird that you said that you was doing a zine then, and you said you've been doing a zine during lockdown. And I literally, somebody reached out to me last night that listens to this podcast just saying, I heard you interview, blah, blah, blah. They're in my new fanzine. Can I send you my fanzine? And it's like, you know, I used to write a fanzine when I was younger. And I just think these things, to have something in a time where everything's so quick, fast, disposable on screens, just to have something that's personal and tangible again that you can hold, that's amazing.
100%. And it really, like, you know, I in a lot of ways, I regret getting out of it, you know, like of like, you know, for a number of reasons. Like I did a zine all through my teens and then I stopped. And a lot of that, of course, had to do with like, well, being in a band and touring so much and isn't the time, you know, like I still would read zines and stuff. But like so many of those elements of like the punk scene creating its own network that were actual like tools of resistance in a real way that could never be understood by oppressors, that now those networks have kind of dissolved and aren't as strong, and that things have shifted to a more online community, that you're so much more in danger of that being controlled or taken away from you. Of like, if all your connections are built through Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, and for some reason the government were to be like, you can't do that anymore, you know, like it's all gone.
Yeah.
Whereas even if, you know, with making a zine and communicating through the post, even if the post were to shut down, those physical zines still exist, you know, and like a zine was such a resource and database of like, here's addresses for other people who make zines. Here are the reviews of their zines. Here's the way you can contact them, you know, like, and just because a zine was a year or two old, you could discover it at another punk house. And it was still like, oh, wow, that's a, you know, like it was still a physical thing that you could go to. Whereas like, you know, like you do a live stream and the second it's over, it's gone. It's digital ash. It might as well have never existed. You know, that there's such limited lasting reverberation from it that it's not as worth your time as like the physical is. And I have such a renewed appreciation for that. And I hope so many more other people get a renewed appreciation.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
For it.
Absolutely. Track 5, the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Well, I had a three-way tie for this, and I'll explain the three-way tie. Kind of was based on like levels of alcohol consumption.
So, okay.
It's like, you know, you get to the club and a lot of the times my friends, especially in Gainesville, we'd go to the 80s night, you know, like that was the most fun club at this club called University Club. Cause like everyone knew the songs and everyone would dance most uninhibitedly. Cause I think that like you didn't really have to know how to dance to dance to 80s songs, you know? So like you get to the club and we would always drink tequila and you've got the shots in you and you're like really feeling good. And fucking Billy Idol's Dancing With Myself comes on. Right. And you're just fucking raging. You know, like you're having a really good time and you're like, and you need that initial push of like, all right, well, I want to dance. I'm loaded right now. I'm a little lit, but I don't know how to ask someone to dance because I'm socially awkward. So I'm dancing with myself. I'm just going out here on the dance floor and I'm fucking owning it, right? So then
you literally, you know, fist pump like Billy as you stress that point as well.
Right? And I would do it on the dance floor. I'd have my fist pump and my lips snarling. And then you get a little, like, you've had a little too much to drink and you're getting a little sloppy, right? And maybe also, like, you're getting a little sad. And then the Police Is So Lonely comes on, right? And that really hits you in your emotional center, right? And, like, that has the, like, slow moments of it where at that point, like, you have enough alcohol in you where you're like, no, I am a good dancer. You know, I can dance to these slow moments in the song, but it's still got the rocking parts where you can kick it up and you're, like, really going on the dance floor, right? And then to close out the night, my song, but the last song inevitably that I would always ask the DJ to play, like end of the night, was Straight to Hell by The Clash, you know? And so that's the, like, you're totally wasted. There's maybe four people left in the club and you're just standing in the middle of the dance floor by yourself, dancing to Straight to Hell by The Clash. And it's a beautiful end to the evening. And yeah, those are my three choices.
I mean, Laura, I don't think anybody's answered that question any better. You've broke down the entire evening. Love it. Well, for track six, I'm going to ask you to pick a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Okay, so I really thought about this one too. And, you know, again, like I grew up in a military family, so we moved a lot, around a lot. So at first I was like, well, what's my hometown, you know? So I settled on Gainesville to choose as my hometown because moved there when I was 18, band for all intensive purposes, started there, and has the best music scene. But that being said, like there's some really like amazing artists from Gainesville. And at first I was like, well, I should pick a Tom Petty song because like he's the biggest artist from Gainesville. And I mean, my first CD ever was Tom Petty, Full Moon Fever. But then I was like, Tom Petty's gotten enough credit over the years. Everyone knows who Tom Petty is. And so he has so many songs to choose from. So let's skip that. So the band I chose is a band called I Hate Myself. And the song is called Song 2, right? And it's the second song on their one-sided 12-inch EP. And it was a song on a record that I heard before I moved to Gainesville. That at the time, it was probably like 1997 or something like that. You know, Gainesville was very mysterious to me, like understanding what Gainesville was about. It was like mythological to me in many ways because it was like there was a real scene there. You know, there was real punk labels there. There was real venues, real punk bands happening in Gainesville. And it was at the time where like emo meant a different thing, you know, and like hardcore kind of meant a different thing. And the bands that were happening there were like the emo bands of the mid to late 90s where like, you know, they wore headbands and they'd have like gauged ears and like, or it was like, you know, very influenced by like the kind of San Diego scene of like bangs in the front and spiky hair in the back, Vulcan looking, you know, but I Hate Myself were like the epitome of emo core. I mean, like, listen to the band name, I Hate Myself, yeah. Right? This really like encapsulated the Gainesville sound in a way that like I can remember going up there the first couple times and going to house shows. And it was almost like you'd go in the room and see the bands playing and you could see the sound coming out of them. You know, like the whole room was alive and vibrating and the amplifiers were pushing through the people in a way that you could see them all vibrating and you felt it differently. And they were a band that will forever define that for me. Even though they're a band, I Hate Myself in particular, that I never actually saw live because they had kind of stopped playing before I got there. So they're like forever a myth of a band to me.
Wonderful. Laura, for your last track, it's your opportunity to turn someone onto something that they don't know. And it's a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
So I chose a song by Valerie June called Somebody to Love. And, you know, I'll tell you, this song was turned on to me by an acquaintance of mine who passed away. And it was turned on to me after they had passed away. In Pensacola, Florida, there was a vibrant punk scene and like a lot of cool punk bands that Against Me connected with early on. And we used to go and play there, these amazing shows like on Hobo Beach and like house shows and VFW halls and stuff like that in this venue called Sluggos. And there was a kind of scene stalwart there, this person named Ken Stanton, who like played music himself, like a lot of busking on the street, organized shows, and was just like a real important part of the scene there. And we weren't necessarily like friends or anything like that. But I knew him, you know, like, and I knew him from shows and he would be at our shows and like we played together a couple times, his bands and stuff. And he passed away this past year and it hit me, you know, like in the way so many things have been hitting me this year of seeing things disappear and feeling such a change. And so after he disappeared, I did a random search on Spotify of his name, and he had posted a playlist that was all of his work music, just called Work Playlist. It's the only playlist he posted on his Spotify profile. And I'm assuming it's the songs that he would listen to at work. And it's the first song on the playlist. And I had never heard the song before. And it's a beautiful song. It's like a heartbreakingly beautiful song. And since hearing it, I've of course gone and, you know, invested in Valerie June's whole catalog. And she's incredibly talented. And there's so many other great songs too. And it's totally worthwhile for people to look in. But I was so thankful for that playlist to be there, to be found. And you know, I was listening to the playlist the other day when I was thinking about choices for this and thinking like how amazing it is to have that, you know, of like this, you can hear what someone else heard still.
Yeah. Wonderful. It's a beautiful record as well. And when I got your list and I went and listened to that, cause I hadn't heard it before. I've then listened to the album, and at the end of the album, there's an acoustic version of it as well, which is just played on a ukulele, which is really beautiful as well. Laura, what we do to accompany this podcast is we put together our own Spotify playlist of all the songs that we've spoke about on here. So I'll throw a few of her songs on there as well, because there's some wonderful stuff on that record. Laura, hopefully we find ourselves coming out of the lockdown quarantine thing that we're, you know, we seem to be going on forever. What are you looking forward to, you know, from whatever kind of normality comes from this personally, and what's happening creatively?
You know, what do I look forward to? What I look forward to most is being in a sweaty room with people. It's like being surrounded by people, being playing live music and having stage divers jump off the stage and people fucking like, you know, a room just like full of energy. That I look forward to most. But beyond that, you know, like is like I don't think there's ever going to be a return to normalcy. You know, like I think that it is a brave new world. And I think that with that, like we really have to strive to become better versions of ourselves. And that time and time again, it's been proved to us right now that no one's coming to save us. Like politicians don't care. You know, politicians are, for the most part, happy to let independent music die. They're happy to let venues disappear. They're happy to let culture disappear. And they're not coming to save us. And if you look around, like, you know, when it comes to like the bigger world problems of global warming and stuff like that, no one's coming to save us. It's up to us to make those changes that are necessary. And I hope that this just like really translates the importance of that and the urgency of that, and that everyone takes the impetus to on their own make those changes that are needed and to push us into a better world. And that so much of the like dead weight that we used to carry with us that didn't serve us or didn't make us better is just kind of decluttered and left by the wayside and dropped from our lives. And that when we come out of this, we're able to move forward like with greater speed and velocity and gain an even greater momentum.
Creatively? I mean, that couldn't have been answered any more beautifully, Laura. And so what's coming up creatively?
Well, I have a record coming out on October 1st. but my whole approach has kind of been like, I don't want this to slow me down. So like, you know, there's the period of lag that happens between when you finish making a record and when it comes out. That I've kind of taken as a challenge of like, it's not a time to stop working. Just like keep working, keep waking up in the morning and writing songs, keep writing in general, and just like stay busy, you know, like life can't come to a standstill. So creatively, I just plan on keeping on pushing myself and hopefully, you know, eventually I'll be able to be around other people physically.
And if people want to keep up to speed on what's going on, where's the best place?
You know, I am very active on social media. Like I am on Twitter. I use Twitter like text messaging with the world. So like I am on Twitter. I am on Facebook. I am on Instagram. But also, you know, like, I don't know, send a signal flare. I'm out there.
Laura, it's been absolutely wonderful chatting to you. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been really nice talking about your records.
Right on. My pleasure, Stu. Thank you.
Thanks loads, Laura. There you go. I did not want that chat to finish. Laura was incredible. Just, you know, I don't know why I'm telling you. You've just listened. You know how incredible Laura was. Yeah, head over to Spotify and check out the playlist of all the songs that we've spoke about. Thanks again to Emma. Obviously, thanks to you lot for listening and supporting this podcast. And why not have a look in the archives, because there's some amazing chats in there. You can hear my natters with the likes of Frank Carter. Amanda Abington. Oh, gosh. It's so weird. There's 170. And when I actually put myself on the spot to actually list them, like, I completely forget. So go and have a look. Like, that's the best thing you can do. And or even better, subscribe. And if you see us on the socials, we're on all the usual places. Give us a like, a love, a share, a retweet, you know, anything that helps. Because it all helps, you know, to support the podcast. You can find out about everything at www.offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. See you next time. Thanks ever so much for listening. Love you lots. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.